Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing in red bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the adults we are today. But welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you are about to hear is poetry that we are made of. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets through Blog Talk Radio. Late Night Poets is a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be part of the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are. We post the poems in the chat so you can read and comment along with us. I'm Aphasiana, and filling in for Dexter, we have my co-host, Dan Deschino. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Aphasiana, how are you? Yes, this is Dan Deschino here, the poor man's Dexter. Very happy to be here with you tonight.
No, no. You're wonderful, Dan. I just have to give Dex a shout-out, too.
Of course, yes, I'm honored. And it's great. It's great to be with you. You know, I guess you people. You know, it's. I'm very excited. I've always been a fan of yours, Aphasiana. I think I told you that. So it's very exciting to do a show with you. And I guess people have work wives, so I guess you're my poetry wife right now, right? So there you go. although Bobby also is too. So does that make me a poetry polygamist? Might be.
I think
know.
So. All right, Bobby and I are sister wives. Good to know.
That's right, absolutely. But yeah, I'm very excited about tonight's show. You gave me the honor of picking the contest, and we actually have multiple contests tonight, though, as well, too. If you, right? I think it's kind of exciting tonight.
Yes, we do. We have one contest by you to start off with, and then one from me, and then we have some poems inspired by a picture that I believe you took.
Absolutely, yeah. So the first contest, when you told me to do this, and you know I know what Double Helix is all about. I just started thinking now, you know, this is really about the sun, and it might be strange to do it at this time of year, but that's exactly what I was thinking about, was that, you know, at least for us in the northern hemisphere, what's happening, the sun is kind of lessening, right? It gets darker earlier, it gets lighter in the morning later, so we kind of miss the sun. So I started thinking about our connection to the sun and to stars. Because we're starting to have less sun, but have more connection to stars. Again, in the northern hemisphere, it gets a little bit drier. So at nighttime, I don't know if people notice this. I try to look at the stars every night. The stars get more prominent because there's not as much moisture in the atmosphere, so you can actually see a little better. So we go from a lot of sun to kind of a lot of stars. And I was really thinking about the connection of that. And myself, as a self-declared rock and roller, the drummer that I am, I decided to use some rock and roll quotes to inspire, as well as I put a picture up as well, too, just because I like pictures of the sun shining through some wintry branches with some snow on it, something I took last year in my yard. So that's really the contest, and we had some really interesting rights today. The first prompt, I don't think we had any rights to, right? But the second prompt, we did the first one. And everybody on the show is going to have to bear with me, because if Iziana gave me some instructions on how to do this, but she's the expert, I'm the amateur, so she might have to instruct me again, but I think I got it down. I think we'll be all right tonight. But am I correct?
You're
I think
good.
We only have the... No, nobody for the first prompt, is that correct?
That is. Well, there's nobody who wrote specifically to it, but we do have a few people who wrote to, like, kind of everything in general. So it could be incorporated in, but there's nobody who chose that prompt specifically.
Yes, yes, excellent. That is true. That is true. And just you and I so far today, right, that we have here?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
I'll tell
I think
you
we
somebody
do have,
joins in.
If somebody joins? Okay, great. We have Mel C. That's on the board, as well as Pee Wee Cussin. That's on the board as well, too. I'm going to give a little promotion to myself. I actually think I found Pee Wee on Instagram the other day, my first late-night poet I found on social media. Embarrassingly, I just signed up for Instagram a few days ago, literally my very first social media in my life I've ever had besides LinkedIn. I don't know if you count that. So anybody is on social media out there and wants to say hi, I'm under Dan Deschino Poetry. Daniel Deschino Poetry, and I'm excited to actually, for in 2022, the end of the year, actually getting on social media for the first time. So that's an interesting experience. I'm just trying to promote my book is all, and, you know, so I can't, I have to be, you have to be on social media these days to do it. So I bit the bullet, and that's what I'm doing.
That's why I get you on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah, that maybe. If I had time, I'd do all those things. But yeah, I don't know about TikTok. I get addicted to stuff too much. I've heard how addictive it is. If I start getting on these things, it's all I'm going to do. You know, I need to do other things. I'm trying to limit it. I'm
you
already
need to hire a social media director.
Yeah. Okay. I need to. Yeah. If someday I can hire a social media director, I'll be, yes, then I will do that. Then I'll be happy to do that. But shall we get started, do you think?
Yes. So will you read us prompt two?
Sure, and I'll read prompt one as well, since it's general, just because there's nothing to it. So prompt one was a famous one by Joni Mitchell. It says, "We are." It's from the song Woodstock, which was famously sung by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, but it's, "We are stardust, we are golden, we are billion-year-old carbon, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden." Such a beautiful prompt. I think it's pretty famous. Most people who know rock and roll know that prompt, and it's just beautiful. I couldn't not include that one. But the first, the prompt number two that we have our first poem about, is from my, I always quote my favorite poet and drummer, one of my personal heroes, Neil Peart of the band Rush. Yes, his name is pronounced Peart, not Pert. Just to give him a little prompt, a little respect there. And this is from a song called Presto off the same album. And the prompt is, I am made from the dust of the stars, and the oceans flow in my veins. Here I hide in the heart of the city, like a stranger coming out of the rain. I always love that prompt. And what's our first poem?
Okay, so our first poem is Stardust by Anton Ansford, 37. Of course, I have come from the stars to give you a truth, that is to say. We are all made of a witch's brew, one part collapsed star from a millennium ago, one part skin of ancient ghosts. Not brave, but the blood of Julius Caesar curses through your veins. Not beautiful, but you have Cleopatra's nose and Maryland walk. Not smart, but you have the synapses of Einstein. Not funny, but your bones are knit with the wit of a thousand comics and poets. One part, the illusion of self. Boiling together at about 36.5 degrees, mixed with unconscious archetype of the human race, renewed and remixed every 7 years. This is your birthright as a native of planet Earth. Please do not squander it. End poem.
That was a great read. And you're going to have to stop me, Aphasiana, because I think I could talk about this pretty much for the whole 2 hours. Anybody who reads my poetry knows that I get into a lot of scientific poetry. I like that kind of stuff. And this is absolutely just amazing. There's so much interesting interesting facts in here, and I think what he's getting at, and I really love the first line. That actually struck me when I first read it. Of course, I come from the stars. He's just saying like of course I do. I can feel that. I know I'm from the stars. You can't tell me anything differently. And he's talking about the witch's brew, but then also about the blood of Julius Caesar, the beauty of Cleopatra, and the way I take that, and the synapses of Einstein is, we're all human. We're all there. We have that potential. You know, we have the leadership of Julius Caesar. You know, I don't know if he's necessarily talking about, physically that we still have that, but he's talking about, I think we all have the same stuff. We all come from the same place, and we all have the same potential. You know, I've written and discussed with many people about Einstein, right? The word, like, his name literally means genius now, right? It's come into pop culture. Call somebody an Einstein, unless you're calling him that sarcastically, it means genius, right? Unless you say, okay, Einstein, good job, right? Then it's sarcastic, but it kind of means genius. And I have a book of essays by Einstein. And Einstein was very smart. Scientifically, he came up with stuff that was just amazing, right? But I have a book of, and I might have said this on a commentary before, but a book of essays by him. And for example, one of the essays, he talks about how women aren't as smart as men and can never be as good at mathematicians as men. Like, he just says things that are wrong, you know? And to me, I'm like, wow, Einstein is it's not even ideas. It's not even like, okay, that's his opinion. He's saying things that are just absolutely incorrect. And it always made him to me much more human level. I don't believe in the word genius. I really don't. I think that everybody just has potential and they use their potential. And we're all just human, and we're all the same. We're all basically the same in a lot of different ways. And I think that's kind of what he's talking about here. And then I also love the ending as well, too. This is your birthright as a native of planet Earth. Please do not squander. Now, renewed and remixed every 7 years is interesting, too, because I believe scientifically that is how long it takes your body to renew itself. Old age is when you're not doing that, right? But when you're younger, like you, Ophasiana, or other people, your body's literally different. Like you're literally renewing yourself, and you're physically you're not the same person that you were before. When you touch yourself, that skin wasn't there 7 years ago. You know, everything except some parts, like your bones and some parts of your teeth, don't necessarily completely renew. But this is really interesting and very scientific, and he really packed a lot in the middle there. But I'm going to stop now. Like I said, I could talk about this for hours. But there's a lot packed in here. What do you think of Ophasiana? Crazy way to start off the show tonight, I think.
I think it's a wonderful poem. I think that you summed it up quite nicely. I like how he does it like a recipe, you know, one part this, one part that.
Yep.
The one part illusion of self is a good line, because that's got to be in there. And even the way that it kind of questions things, like not smart, but you have this, not funny. It's like pointing out the fact that people don't necessarily see those good qualities in themselves, but there's that potential in there. There is something that maybe they don't appreciate. The Cleopatra's nose makes me happy because I have this friend who, to me, looks exactly like Cleopatra. Like, whenever we're in a museum or something and there's pictures of Cleopatra, I'm like, it's her. I'm like, look at this. It's you. And she was just like, no. I swear, she looks exactly like Cleopatra. So I love that that's, like, the example of beautiful. I'd be like, hey, look at this. I'm going to send her this poem. I really like the way that this is all put together. And I think you're right. It's all about the potential. It's not so much like we have Julius Caesar's DNA, because really, if they were going to do that, like, let's reference like Genghis Khan or someone who I think they've figured out it's about 16 million descendants still alive today. He had a lot of babies.
He was a busy man.
He was. traveled a lot, and everywhere he left some seed. I think if we were going to talk genetics, it would be him. But instead, we got to think about all the different aspects of humanity that we do have the potential for. And I like the way he worded the part about Einstein, the synapses of Einstein. I really liked that. So this is wonderful, and I like how he ends it. Do not squander it. You know, like, let's use that potential that we have. Wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that one part illusion of self, you're right. I think that is really right. You know, it's kind of the way we think about it, and it does always amaze me all the different thought processes. You know, I always think I'm constantly questioning myself. I'm constantly saying, am I correct about things? Because, you know, think about how the ideas that you have and how different everybody else's ideas are. And there's 7 billion, there's been 100 billion people on this planet, you know. So who's actually right and who's not? So it's that illusion of self, that illusion of what you think. Is it real? You know, I think so much differently than I did 20 years ago. What am I going to be thinking 20 years from now? Am I going to say what a fool I was when I was, you know, in my 50s? Like, it's that illusion of what your mind is. So interesting. And excellent. What are we going to do now?
Okay. We're going to listen to prompt 3's responses. So prompt 3 was, ain't no sunshine when she's gone, only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Okay, sorry about my singing. That's by Bill Withers. So the first entry for that is by Stephen T. Wellman, and why don't you read that for us, Dan?
Absolutely, and I will not be singing tonight because I'm not going to submit anybody to that horribleness. So thank you for singing that song. But yes, I'll absolutely do that. It's called Iridescent. It's been over 1,460 days, each fallen day a number, grains of sand slipping away. I count the stars, I count the beats of my heart, drawing a map, trying to find my way back to you. I'm stuck inside this global dimension, a trapped spirit with clipped wings. I played your voicemail today. I flew too close to the scorching sun. free falling into this ominous ocean, high tides of my heart swell. The salt water oozes over the golden sunset, preserves your beautiful memory. You can find me sitting on the edge of time, waiting for these melodramatic moments to melt into me. So may I join you in this iridescent, opalescent oblivion. End poem. Wow, so beautiful. What do you think of Faziana?
I love that final line. May I join you in this iridescent, opalescent oblivion. I mean, excellent word choices there, especially those last three. And I also like the alliteration of melancholic moments to melt. And melancholic moments just goes great together in general, but to have them melt into me and just kind of like seep into that melancholy, that's quite the thing. Beautiful, beautiful wording. So I also like that it breaks it down into days, and then it's talking about like how much it would be in different terms, like thinking about the grains of sand falling during that time, the stars, the beats in my heart is a really good way to count down things, especially because it seems like this is like how long it's been since he lost the person. I think 1,460 would be around 4 years, but my math is terrible. It's been a while, and there's this loss that is still so significant. A trapped spirit with clipped wings. I played your voicemail. And there's something about having this technology where we can listen to someone's voice after they died that can be wonderful and haunting at the same time. Like having that little clip and then just playing it over and over again, because that's a remnant of this person who you loved, just hearing them talk again. Now, my husband will have these shows to listen to me ramble, should he desire.
Right, exactly.
I'll be immortalized through Late Night Poets. But I love it's such a romantic thing. I mean, it's not even necessarily a romantic relationship, but the idea of, like, holding on to someone's voice in that way. I think this is just beautiful and heartfelt. Like, it says friendship, so actually I might be making stuff up about it being romantic, but it doesn't have to be. You know, you can love a friend and want that connection with them. So this is wonderful, Stephen. Thank you for sharing. What did you think, Dan?
Yeah, first I just want to say Mel C said, wow, thanks for analyzing. It said, love the singing. So your singing is a big hit. You got to keep doing it. And I thought, I thought it was great. The alliteration, I will comment. I knew you were going to like that. When I write for your contest, if there's alliteration in it, usually when I wrote, I'm usually thinking of you. I write that for you, usually, Faziana, because I know you always seem to really like alliteration. So I do usually write those for you when I write for your contests. I'm going to try to share some stories tonight and do something a little different. And this actually, he did make it. He put friendship in the comments, and I do see it as romantic as well too, but I actually thought of my parents with this, and it was I played your voicemail today. I have my parents both died in 2016, and I actually have voicemails from them on my phone still that I luckily saved. and every once in a while I will play them. I actually found a cassette tape of an aunt of my, of a great aunt of mine, who was born in the 1800s, and this is a cassette tape back in the 70s, I believe, late 70s, early 80s, of her kind of, she was very old. She was close to 90 at that point, and her singing and telling stories. So the voicemail made me remind my parents. It's funny. I loved my parents, and they were great parents, and I wasn't overly close with them, but I spent a lot of time with them at the end of their life, because with my son, I used to want to bring him over and get them to know him. And I probably think about, when they died, my mother had diabetes. She actually had diabetes for 80 years, one of the longest lived people actually in the history of insulin. Believe it or not, she's like number three or four I don't know if she is now, but at that time she was. So, and my father for the last bunch of years had to take care of him, and he hid it from us. Being a guy who grew up in the Great Depression, he didn't hide how much it was to take care of her. He actually died a few months before her. He died in August, and I'll never forget. I was at his bedside, and I left, and it always struck me that I shouldn't have. It's always been bothering me, because as soon as I got home, half an hour after I left, he passed away. So I kind of missed it. My mother died 3 months later. Sometimes, and they pop into my mind all the time, for different reasons. And sometimes I play their voicemails just to kind of hear their voice again, either just to hear it, or sometimes if I feel like I need, a little love or a little something, I play their voicemails. So that's what this made me think of. And I think people can relate this type of a poem to all of that, to lots of different situations in their lives. Right. And then, waiting to see them again, right. To join them in this iridescent, opalescent oblivion. So beautifully written. So anyway, that's my comment. That's what I thought of this. So, great job, Stephen. That was beautiful.
Sorry for the loss of your parents, but it sounds like you had a great connection, and don't feel guilty for leaving. You were there that day. Like, you were there for him, so be proud of that.
I know. Both my parents died when I left. My mother actually, it was literally seconds before I walked in the room, and the nurse told me that, and I totally believe my mother knew I was coming, and that's why she did. They always say that when loved ones are dying, a lot of times they'll do it when no one's in the room, because they don't want you to, they don't want to make you see that, and that's what I believe happened. So, anyway, we can move on. I think we might have our one and only SoundCloud.
We do. That's right. Aside, because we were talking about listening to the voicemails, at my library, we have a digitization station. So, if you have old VHS or cassettes or whatever, you can transfer them into MP3s or, video files, because a lot of people, it's hard to get a VCR or a cassette player anymore. So you can digitize to make sure that that's preserved on the next kind of gen of technology.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's awesome. I have my grandfather took some home movies, and I bought a little digitization thing for my computer, and I did that for his, and I got to try to do it for other things, but that's fantastic. You don't want to lose that stuff, So that's great that you guys have that.
Yeah. Little plug for the library.
All right, cool.
Visit your local library for such things.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look. Maybe mine does have that. But anyway, we have what do we got coming up here?
I'm going to play the SoundCloud by Weaver of Dreams.
Here is the night, full of shadow and pain, until the sun rises to show a golden horizon. Untouchable, it holds beauty all unknown, never to return, my light forever gone. You are my life, therefore gave it meaning. Before that thought, I'd waited only for you. Your heartbeat that echoed within my mind. In time of lost love, nothing could renew. Music played, a dirge, solemn, somber, and deep. Melodious enough, but filled with untold pain. This leads me to the day when I may see the sun. Feel your warmth in my arms, and I am home again.
Wow, amazing. I try to consider myself a manly man, but I might be crying tonight. That's very heartfelt. So, and Pee-wee says, condolences, Dan, thank you. Yep, no, it's part of life. I don't want to get too sad and deep, but, part of life is that happened to your parents. It's better than the alternative. Nobody wants to have the opposite, parents or kids. So, But I love Weaver's voice, and I could really feel the loss. Like, you could feel the emotion when she read this. She did such a beautiful reading. And, I mean, there's so much on this. Again, I don't want to reread the whole thing, but if you were my life, therefore it gave meaning. Before that, I'd waited only for you. That's so beautiful. I've been thinking about meaning a lot. My mother, I'll go back to my mother. She was very sick for a long time, and her meaning was my father. My father passed away, and I kind of think that she realized she was going to be stuck in this nursing home. He wasn't around again. She couldn't go back home. She knew my sister and I were all set up, and she'd been in pain for a long time. She just kind of, went. And I always hear a lot of times that people, when they're old, if they've been married 50, 60 years and they lose a spouse, a lot of times they're not much longer for this, unless you give them meaning, right? Unless, like, their kids are around a lot or something. I really believe that meaning in life is something that people need a lot. It's not nutrition, right? It's not this health. It's not air. It's not these things that we can hold. But I think just the brain controls the body, right? And I think just if you kind of don't have meaning, if you're a sports hero and you're older and you now can't move, your whole life was sports, and now you're old and you're sick and you're hurt and you're just kind of stuck in the house all day and you can't really move around, you lose meaning. When people kind of don't have that reason anymore, right? I really think that affects the body tremendously. I really do. So I think having something in your life that is meaning, a reason to get up, a reason to be excited, something that you know you need to accomplish, I think is huge. And Weaver with this, really talking about the love, the person, the meaning, which is to me is my wife and my son. She just did this so beautifully, and I loved it. I thought she did a great job and a great reading. What did you think?
I really like the line, untouchable, it holds beauty all unknown. And, that is one of the things about, like, the sunrise and things like that. It's not something that you can easily, quantify. It can't be something that you buy. It's not something that you can collect. You can try to take pictures of it, but it never does it justice. Even the best photographers, you cannot capture that. And there's something really special about things that can't be captured. The fact that it's untouchable makes it extra special. And you were talking about meaning, and she does later, you were my life, therefore give it meaning. That's kind of an untouchable thing too. You can't easily grab on to meaning. It's just, it's there, and that makes it its own beautiful thing. So, I don't know, that line really struck me, the untouchable holds beauty all unknown. And then when it's talking about the music, melodious enough but filled with untold pain. So even if it sounds beautiful, sometimes it still strikes you down. And sometimes that's part of the beauty. I actually really like sad songs. I tend to like sad songs better than happy songs. And then I realize, I'm enjoying this, but it's making me sad. So how am I enjoying it? Why am I doing this to myself? I guess it's sort of like people watching scary movies. We're all masochists in the end. This was a beautiful poem. I really loved it. And I love the font that she chose. I know that doesn't seem like a big thing when you're listening, but she has, the cutest little font where it just kind of curls the first letter, the M's in music and melodious. I love it. I got to play with my fonts more. I've just been using the default. But this just seemed to fit what she wrote really nicely. So props to you, Weaver of Dreams, for that attention to detail.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I like the font, too. I like what you said about the pictures. I'm fooled every day. I take pictures all the time, oh, look at that sunset. Oh, look at this. This looks beautiful. I look at it, and I look at my phone, you just didn't capture it. And I'm fooled every day. I'm, all excited to take a picture, and it never captures it. But I still get excited about taking them all the time, and I agree. There's that you have to be there for most things. You have to experience it, So, yeah, absolutely. All righty. So We have
prompt four. Nobody wrote yes. to specifically.
Oh, Charles, I know we were through.
You can share
it
anyway, just so people know with the general ones, it could be included.
Sure, it's I forget his name, Randy Jacks or something like that. I apologize, the singer, but it's written by Rob McEwen and Jacques Roman Briel. I looked it up earlier and I forgot. But Seasons in the Sun. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun. But the hills that we climbed were just seasons out of time. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun. But the wine and the song, like the seasons, have all gone. Kind of a famous one as well, too. And then a few people wrote for prompt five, which we're going to do. And that's definitely a famous one by John Lennon. Which is, and you can say, if you want to sing it, you can. Ophazian, I can't sing. But it is, we will all shine on, like the moon and the stars and the sun. Yeah, we will all shine on and on and on and on. And I always loved the simple words of John Lennon, and I thought, you know, this is just so beautiful and poignant, so I love that. And with that said, we do have some people who wrote for prompt five, and what would that be?
All right, so prompt five. Wait, you just read prompt five, right? The John Lennon one?
I just read it, yep, that was the John Lennon one. Yep.
Yes, okay, so S Sharp is the first one to write to it, and it's called Take Me Back Home. Ice forms, even on the limbs of the living. The cold breath of life breathes in the shadows that cast from winter's scorn. Distant stars hang in the darkening sky. Formulating plans, they form chains like Christmas lights, maybe streetlights, that guide us upon our road. They show us the way, point us back home, like family. They come on the darkest of nights. Sunlight casts through the web-like limbs of the tree. End poem.
Really interesting. Scott has a great way of brevities. I bought his latest book, and it's very beautifully written. And he writes, you know, shorter poems, but really packs a lot into it. And I just love the idea of you know, stars as lights. You know, we're a little, I think you and Babbler talked on your show about, I think it was Babbler might have been kind of discussing light pollution a little bit on one of your shows last. And it is something that we don't really notice nowadays. I live in a city, I live right outside of Boston in a place called Malden. And, you know, I can't see a lot of stars. And I've certainly been places where you can see them. So a little spoiled that you don't use those as lights, but they are, you know, you can't read by them maybe, but they are lights and they are guiding, and it's a familiar, friendly face. Distant stars hang in the darkening sky, formulating plans. They form chains like Christmas lights, maybe street lights that guide us on our road. You know, what did ancient sailors have? They just, you know, they might have had a compass or a sextant, but, you know, mostly they had the stars. That's how they guided themselves through. That's how they told time. That's how they told the seasons. I mean, there was so much by the stars. I think, you know, we always tend to think we're much smarter maybe than people that lived, you know, 1,000 years ago. But they, I'm sure, knew the stars like we know our Netflix series. Right? I hate to say, you know, I might be able to do, you know, The Office or Simpsons quotes or Futurama quotes, but they knew the stars. They could read them, and they made. They studied them, and they knew that planets were there, even though they didn't know what they were. They noticed that they moved differently, and it was a much bigger deal back then. They show us the way. They point us back home like family. They come on the darkest of nights. What a beautiful saying that is. So great job, great job. And I want to quote some people on the on the board. So Mel C said she loves the simplicity of John Lennon's lyrics too. Instant karma. Yep, that's right, Pee Wee. And Pee Wee said, ancient knowledge, we're idiots comparatively. And in some ways we might be because we don't spend as much time thinking as we do taking input, right? So good insight, Pee Wee. Yeah, but what are your thoughts, Faziana?
I love how ancient cultures from all over the world use stars in their storytelling as well, because, like you said, they looked at it all the time. They read them and memorized them, and it was something that they would quote. But they would, constellations are basically stars linked together because it kind of looks like something. So when it says here, they form chains like Christmas light, that makes me think about when we draw the lines between the stars for the constellations. There are certain ones that are more popular now, but, I mean, depending on from what perspective, like where you were in the world and around what times, they were a little bit different. The Cree people in Manitoba, which is close to where I am, sort of, in Canada, they had so many different stories about there's the bear. I don't know them very well, but the animals that they experienced in their own lives were seen in the stars, because that's what people do. They project their experiences into things. And I think it's interesting how the stars have had such a big impact on storytelling all around the world. And when it said that a part about they form chains, that's all I could think about. And they do point back home. I go camping a lot, kind of in the middle of nowhere, so I get to see the stars without light pollution, and it's a totally different experience. So you think about those ancient cultures where they didn't have the light that we did today. They got to really fully experience them that we don't as often. Even though I don't live in a very big place, there's still definitely light pollution here if I'm not out, you know, being a weirdo that I am in the forest. I think this is,
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say, if you're going to be a weirdo, it must be in the forest and nobody can see you, right? And you can be as weird as you want.
Absolutely. I think Laurent just joined us. Somebody did. Let's see. Welcome, caller.
Hello.
Oh, it is you. Hello. Good to have you here.
Hey, Laurent. Great to have
Daniel.
You here.
Faziana.
Great to hear. Yes, and just for everybody listening, just want to make sure, Laurent called us all handsome. He said, good evening, you handsome people. So that, I'm sure, includes everybody who's listening and everybody who will be listening if they download it. So appreciate that. But right.
I don't know if I've ever been called handsome before. I'll take it.
Well, wait. handsome is gender neutral.
It
all
is.
Right.
In Elizabeth.
A book has
times,
a handsome
right?
cover, a car has a handsome design. I mean.
Absolutely.
I'm
absolutely.
Not complaining. did you get
Laurent,
a chance to hear Scott's poem?
Well, sadly not, but I will go back and read it and comment.
Yeah, no worries.
Okay.
In text.
All right.
Cool.
Do I have one from you tonight that I should be bumping
up? No, I'm
just
here to read. I'm just
okay,
here to read.
Well, thank you for being here. Our next one is by Blue Leader One, and I'm going to put you to work right away.
I'll roll up my sleeves. This is called Morning, Blue Leader One. The sun set in your eyes. I see no surprise. Horizons will rise. Hanging there, frozen bomb, freezing star. Thought it was sad lover. Messages wordless from above, shining through the stars. Understood restless dreams, flying, make-believe heaven's Milky Way. Wait, I will see you again. End poem.
Excellent read, and I really appreciate that you joined on this. Blue Little Run has a really interesting writing style, and I'm definitely a fan. Let's start with you, Faziana. What do you think?
I think that the one word and two word lines really make you contemplate each word. You know, when it's something like lover is the only word on that line, it emphasizes it. Wordless, having wordless alone makes it feel like it is wordless. There's no word right beside it. So you're left to think about each word extra. And I really like the name Milky Way of the Galaxy. So something about, like, having Milky Way there, just, it, I don't know, it flows nicely. The frozen bomb and freezing star of that look in the eyes is really strong. The idea of, like, the going cold, when eyes go cold, that it says a lot in the expression. And the way that it's expressed here is just beautiful.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, the idea that I'm getting out of this that was really interesting was that just that kind of cycle, you know, the sunset in your eyes, I see no surprise, horizons will rise, right? And then, you know, wait, I will see you again. So the kind of the way she's talking about the cycle of it.
Dan, are you still there? You kind of cut off weird. No, he has dropped. Okay.
He'll be back.
Why don't you comment, and I'm going to try to get him back on the board.
All righty. The sunset in your eyes, I see no surprise. The sun becomes, as the poet says, a frozen bomb, a freezing star. When the sun set in her eyes, it was an emotional sunset. It made it difficult for him to see any light. So we have night. And somehow in the night, messages, wordless, as you said, restless dreams flying. His dreams are allowing him the sense of flying through the heavens' Milky Way, because he wishes to discover or be closer to the wordless messages that are shining through. But then there's a pause and a wait. I will see you again, signifies a lifting of that emotional sunset. And now we will have a new sunrise. For what it's worth.
Yes. I like that. Well said. There's no Dan yet, so I think we're just going to have to move on and hope that he will get his connection back soon. Our next poem is by Pee-wee Cushion, who is on the board with us. Hi, Pee-wee. Now, he's on the chat board, not on the phone. So let's see if I can give that a read. Inversion by Pee-wee Cushion. Surreally twisting and distorting in the nucleotide, colors clump and become only one as the sun's core died. Ain't nowhere left to hide. Nuclear fallout ingrained in genetics of all of its permeations. Look around to see exactly the key to its devastation. Twisted and torn down with no light from the night's gloom. And now its reach everywhere, even all through this room. It's time for a tune and the horns of Gabriel Blue. Dystopian daydreams grant me visions into what will never be. Darkness stretching out as far as my eyes can see. Time is coming that you were supposed to have seen. Over and down once again, old friend, back to the streets. Back to the streets to see society shrink away. Now back to the streets that are nothing but empty clay. Take it back down to the streets that were back before today. Back to the solar police and their wildest of chases. Finally, someone must go back prior to the death of sun's faces. Inversion of this perversion of a reality, perverse and worse, this world of nothing to be. sterilization of an illusion you once made of this life. How it's pathetically futile to follow that goal of strife. Last dying rays of the sun reach out in gaping blackness. In the lack of sun, we'll do as we must to bring an end to this. And so the song went with final verses, never sung. In the end, never were he or anyone sunburnt out, squeezed out with life with a wrenching fist. The world of before now made into the gnawing for abyss. Inside a vacuous and nebulous space, there is no living at all. This dream of inversion of this perversion was made to never be dreamed at all. Thusly ended the tune as the horns of Gabriel once again blew. End poem. Oh, I see Dan is back. Welcome back, Dan.
I am. Oh, man, you should have heard the comment. I was a soliloquy. I was on my soapbox for like 10 minutes, and then I realized, am I still on this thing? And I'm sure it was human error. I think I closed out my browser by mistake. So apologies to those, but thank you. But I did hear the read, great read, and Pee Wee said bravo, so he enjoyed the read of his poem. Excellent read, Pee Wee said. So yes, I'm back. Sorry about that. Let's start with you, Laurent. What are your thoughts?
I'm still in the process of composing my responses. Any chance you can jump right back to me?
Absolutely, 100%. I can definitely do that. So I'll actually start the comments. And what I've noticed about Pee-wee, Pee-wee and I have to have some discussions because I have a feeling he's a big science fiction fan. He really has been writing. You know, he writes to a lot of my contests, and I see him a lot on here, and he really has a great imagination to him and almost a story with every one of his poems, which I really, really enjoy. So dystopian daydreams grant me visions into what will never be, darkness stretching out as far as the eyes can see. Time is coming that you were supposed to have been seen over once again. Back to the streets to see society shrink away. I hate to say it, but I do think about that sometimes, about, you know, what would it be like if you know, when or if, hopefully never, if humans are gone, you know, what's this, where I'm standing right now, what's it going to look like a million years from now, right? We always think about, we always think about, like, the future, like, what are our grandkids going to see, maybe a couple hundred years, but what's going to happen a million years from now when we're here, you know? And that's a really interesting, it's interesting thought. One of my favorite shows is the cartoon Futurama, and one of the shows, they literally go a billion years into the future. And I always thought that was just so magical because the sun will probably be here still. I think it's got at least a billion years left. I can't remember, or hundreds of millions. It's got a long time left. Anyway, millions of years from now, the sun, you know, we think is still going to be here. I'm totally not saying the right thing, but a long time from now, and I wonder what's going to happen. What are we going to look like? What's going to be here? You know, and that's what it really makes me think about, Pee-wee. And it's beautifully written in that way. And it really makes me think. I would love to see you write some actual, like, longer stories. I think that would be really, really interesting. So fantastic job there. And Mel says, interesting thought indeed. I appreciate the thoughts here and listening. So thank you, Mel. Afasiana, you read it absolutely beautifully. What did you think?
I thought it was fun to read. It had a nice cadence to it, and there are some internal rhymes that I really enjoyed. Like even this dream of inversion of this perversion was made. There's a nice use of internal rhyme, and not just the rhyme of it, but like having the right amount of syllables in the words that rhyme to make it a little bit more complex and to just naturally kind of bounce as you read it. There was one part that I got a little bit thrown, but I actually think it's cool and probably on purpose. In the word eyes, the Y is capitalized, and I don't know. I kind of tripped up on that word because I was like, am I supposed to say it different? but I wasn't sure. But every once in a while, there's something like that that I think is intentional. It just makes you pay attention to a word. I thought there was excellent word choices. I thought the whole thing was very fascinating. What you were saying, Dan, about imagining the future with the differences in the sun. We had this space presentation at work where there was like astronomical experts talking about things, and one of them was talking about like what will eventually happen to the sun because it happens to all stars. And this little girl raises her hand and she's like, "Will it hurt?" And the instructor's like, "Well, what hurt?" And she's like, "When the sun blows up," and the instructor's like, "Well, you're not going to be there because it's going to be a long time in the future." And she's like, "Where will I be?" Oh, it was just so awkward because she was very enthusiastic about, like, "I want to see," and we're like, "No." Let's not have to explain to a four-year-old that she will be dead.
Yes.
It was really cute. Wonderful poem, Pee-wee. I very much enjoyed reading it.
Yes, and he did say he did emphasize the capital Y, so the yes and I's. He said it is aesthetically I like it. So nice job, Pee-wee, on that. And Laurent, how are your thoughts going? Have you been able to formulate them?
Yeah, this looks at, in essence, where we were, where we are, where we are going to be. There's a donkey-like obstinance to man who never learns from the past, but finds himself mired in the same old, same old. Now, entropy being what it is, at some point, as the poet says, serially twisting and distorting in the nucleotide, colors clump and become only one as the sun's core die. Ain't nowhere left to hide. Yeah, at some point, we vanish, albeit slowly, and our own little universe perishes. This poem is a visionary, a pessimistic look at the future of mankind, both thought-provoking and well-written.
I agree. And donkey-like obstinance is now my new favorite saying. I'm going to I need to steal that one. That was great. Like, seriously, like, I want to make a comment on. I'm going to make like a contest just on that saying.
Open patent.
I love it. That's right. I'll give you credit for it. That was beautiful. Awesome. Great. Thank you, guys. Where are you going to take us next there, Captain Afasiana?
You're used to B2. I don't know if I've been promoted to captain yet. leave that to
you're,
my
you're
sister.
You're steering
wife.
The ship, so. Yeah, that's right.
Laurent, Dan was joking that we were his poetry wives. So he's like, "Is it weird that I have two?" I'm like, "No, it's all right."
Yeah, I said, yeah.
So.
I'm a poetry polygamist, I said, so.
that's all right. I have Babbler, so you're going to have to share me, too.
There we go.
I think it's your turn to read, Dan. I'm going to get you to read the one by Rain 474.
Absolutely. Know yourself. The qualities you store under the skin you bore calls from its core. It's my turn to shine and be the wine for which all love to dine. Honor on its face and skill at its base, I now choose to pace. It's my turn to shine and be the wine for which all love to dine. Virtue valors, victory galores, awesome life I adore. It's my turn to shine and be the wine for which all love to dine. End poem. Awesome rhyming. That was so much fun to read. Laurent, can we start with you? Laurent, are you mutating?
You monster.
I was mutating with the best of them. I forgot what I was going to say. This poem is kind of a discovery on learning that you're worth more possibly than you might have thought. you should learn to appreciate yourself and be the wine for which all love to dine. Nicely done.
Absolutely. So no, I thought this was a really interesting take on the on the prompt. You know yourselves and being you as the sun, as the light. Right. What is the sun? What is stars but light? I mean, that is what light is. Right. Without that, there is no light. You know, it could be the artificial light we make, but that is light. It's my turn to shine and be the wine for which all love to dine. I want to be the light. I want to be the light for people to do this. Virtual valors, victory galores, honor on its face, as skill at its base, right? What do you do to make yourself shine and make yourself be the light? It's your skill. It's your honor. And so I think, you know, that was beautifully written. And I think we're all a light at some point for somebody, right? I know we all try to be lights when we come on here and comment and bring people a little bit of light during the day. We all have loved ones that we try to be the light for. We all try to be that for people. And knowing yourself and knowing what you can do, what your right skill at its base, I now choose the place, the qualities you store under the skin you bore. Know yourself, know what your skills are. Everybody has them. I don't know if Asiana is as a librarian. I know there's a lot of times that what you'll do in whatever grades is show me your skill, or you find the skills that the kids have, whatever it is, whatever it could be, a little goofy thing or it could be a very impressive thing, but everybody has something that they develop, right, as kids, something, some skill or some trait that makes them them, that makes them unique, that gives them what they can offer to the world. Am I right about that? And I'll let you comment as well. But that's what I got out of the poem.
I think you're right. It's not just necessarily what you're good at, but it's what you love. I find if people are really passionate about something, that makes them shine. There's like a literal glow that people get when they are talking about something that they are passionate about, no matter what it is. I mean, like a little kid can come tell me about Pokemon, and they know everything about Pokemon, but the way that their smile lights up and their eyes are like, you can just tell like their thoughts are going, and there's something that they're really excited about, no matter what it is. And when you're an adult, it's usually like some kind of hobby. Like for my husband, it's archery. He's so good at archery, but like it's not just that he's good at it. It's when he's doing it or when he's talking about it, like his eyes, like his whole body kind of just like lights up, and that's what you want to get out of people. And that's when I think you light things up for other people, because you have this kind of energy about you that is contagious in a way. It gets other people excited about things. And really, I think if you find something where you know yourself, you let yourself do the things that you love, be passionate about whatever it is that you're passionate about, that's when you glow, and that's when you can help build others up, because you've kind of allowed that glow to happen. So I really like that. And I thought it was an interesting choice to be the wine, because fine wine gets better with age, I believe. I'm not actually a wine drinker, but so it's like you're not trying to make yourself stay young necessarily. You're shining in your moment, and you're letting yourself just get better with time and get to know yourself even more, and then share that light with people. So I thought this had a beautiful message, and it had kind of a rhythmic repetition that felt comforting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell my son, I think he's a great musician. I try to look at him objectively. He doesn't want to get into music. He didn't want to be a professional musician, but he's just such a great composer. And I always told him, I said, Danny, you know, it would be a waste if you don't give that to the world in some way, whether it's just small ways, but you know, use that at some point. You know, give that out, because I really think he's a good composer, and I think, you know, that's everybody should know what their talents are and give that to the world. But great. So you are the captain because you're steering the ship, so what would you like to do? Oh, looks like you posted it, so you already sent us on our way.
Our next one is by Sea Glass. And, Laurent, would you be willing to read that for us?
Certainly. Rain on a Tin Roof by Sea Glass. It was the rain clattering the tin roof for days, washing Washington, more rain than England and Wales put together. I thought it would never stop. And there it was on day five, shafts of liquid gold piercing to the pine and silver birch trees, mounds of dark green moss steamed and sparkled, sunlight raindrops turned branch and twig into chandeliers, lighting the dark rain-soaked forest into enchanted dripping glades, and my spirit sang. End poem.
Wow, yeah, really, really interesting. I'm going to do a second for this. If Aziani, do you want to start? I wanted to comment first, but I need to think about it.
This had such gorgeous imagery. I really loved the sunlit raindrops turned branch and twig into chandeliers, lighting the dark rain-soaked forest. Like, that is just gorgeous. I mean, I love the look of dripping water, and for it to turn the twig branches into chandeliers. I mean, I haven't seen that with just rain, but I with ice, it has definitely looked like chandeliers to me. And this just lets me picture, like, the other season's version of that, bringing things to life. And there's something really vivid about colors when nature is wet. Like, there's this green that's, like, unique to when it's soaking wet. Just absolutely beautiful descriptions. And to describe the sun as liquid gold piercing through the pine and silver birch trees. I mean, I feel like I can see this, and I want to experience it. I want to just be there in this moment, and just I feel it like wash over me as I read this. Enchanted dripping glades. It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm lost in the beautiful imagery of it. I would definitely. I want to go out in nature right now. And it even says that it's inspired by some weeks spent in Washington and the glory of sunshine. Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The imagery, you're right, was beautiful. And, you know, one of the things I love about the poetry on here, it makes me think about things that I've always thought about and never thought about it, if that makes sense. So I always do notice, right, after a rainstorm, things do glisten, right? The sun comes out and you kind of see everything that's still wet and glistening, and I never really thought about it, but the way that it's described here is amazing. It really does kind of give you even more sunshine where the water reflects the light. I said I was going to try to still tell stories for a change tonight. My wife and I went to England and Wales, actually, for our honeymoon. This is back in 1993, so the Stone Ages. And it was cloudy every day. Like, the sun never came out. We were there for 2 weeks, and I remember funny looking at turning on the weather on a TV station, and I'm like, what am I looking at? And I realized, and I started laughing. I'm not making this up. There was literally a giant white blob on the TV and a guy talking about it. All of Great Britain was just covered in clouds. So they literally just had this, you get a picture in the 90s, this like literally white blob with nothing under it. It was comical. The very last day we were there, we were in London, and the very last day we were there, the sun came out, and it really was this just glorious, like almost like God was speaking to us, because I hadn't seen the sun literally for 2 weeks. And I remember exactly where it was. We're in the middle of London. We were walking around, and when that sun came out, it just seemed like a revelation. And you know, we need to realize that more, I guess, but that's what this reminded me of. So great job, Sea Glass. Laurent, I would love to know what's on your mind right now.
Certainly. Just 1 second, please. The,
absolutely.
the effect of 5 days of rain, that continuous clattering that Seagrass refers to, can have an enormously depressive effect over time. At first, it can seem welcome, especially if rain is needed. But after a while, that dim, gray dreariness can really affect the mood. So when that mood is elevated at the end of the rain, there comes that moment when the world is washed clean. And if you're in the right place at the right time, branches and twigs do turn into chandeliers. And it is an enchanting place. And the spirit is so elevated that it sings. It was beautifully done.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It does have an effect on you, right? If you are in the darkness and the clouds all the time, the sunlight, I mean, it definitely has an effect on your spirit. You know, we're creatures of the sun. That's what these contests are about. So excellent points. All right. I'm sure we have lots more fun poetry and see where else we go. Before we do, though, Mel C. did say the imagery is beautiful. So thank you, Mel. You are right, I believe. But where would you like to go?
Well, I'm going to save Pam's because she said she would probably call. She was the last one for your contest, so then I'm going to move on to my contest. And
excellent.
If Pam doesn't call, then we'll just add hers in later on in the show. That's okay. It's just I'm going to save it just in case. So my contest, I kind of based on what Dan was doing, but I thought we might need a few more, so I expanded. It's called Seeing Yourself in the Stars. When you look up at the sky, does it make you feel connected to the universe or insignificant? How do you feel when you see the stars? Are there constellations that you feel linked to? Not necessarily zodiac signs. Look into the night sky and write what it inspires. So I was pretty vague in my prompt. And here are the poems that we got in response to that. Oops. I'm copying the link to my contest instead of the one that I want to do. Okay.
It was a good contest worth copying, so. that's okay.
This one is by Beluga Leader 1. It's called Soft Skies. Soft skies, subtly smoked and gauzy, dimly glittering, dancing light beams, downy dandelion strata, gently giving, greatly grinning, grandly spinning, side-reely singing, singing pretty, timeless vistas of eternity, entering ether eddies, escaping endless endpoints of existing, to maneuver monumental majesties of creation, back to the finite, fine blue marble, hanging in the emptiness. End poem.
Awesome read, as always. I bet the kids love when you read them stories. I can hear you saying voices and everything and getting into it, Faziana. I bet you have a good time with that. And great alliteration and another really interesting one from Blue Leader 1 with the small lines. I love the fine blue marble. Reminds me of Pale Blue Dot, which is a book and a description of the Earth by the great Carl Sagan, where one of the first spacecraft to leave the Earth and turn around. It was actually his idea to have that spacecraft turn around and take a picture of the Earth, and it looks like a pale blue dot, which is always really interesting. What I liked about it was the composition. I thought was really interesting because there is really a great simplicity, but a beautiful simplicity and a beautiful synergy to, in my opinion, to the stars and to the universe that we don't necessarily realize. And that's how I get the composition of this. I don't know if I'm reading too into it, but she has this synergy of the alliteration. Soft skies, subtly smoked and gauzy, dimly glittering, dancing light, dancing down dandelion strata. So I like the composition part of it and how she really did that. So I thought it was really beautiful, and that's what came to mind when I read this, which is fun to have in my mind. Thank you, Leader. I'm rambling. I've had a lot of wine by this point, so my comments might get a little rambling. I have to stop drinking when I'm doing these things. Laurent, take over before I say something really stupid here. And why don't you help me out here?
I'll play it for you.
There you go.
I agree with you about the composition, the rhyming, coupled with the alliteration, make for a very appealing combination. Gently giving, greatly grinning, grandly spinning, side really singing. When you use the word side reel, if I'm not mistaken, that has to do with placing stars in an approximate location, using time to track them down. So the stars are singing from a timeless vista of eternity, but we know where they are. We can locate them. We can find them. And they're locatable in this poem as well, escaping endless endpoints of existing monumental majesties of creation back to the finite blue marble hanging in the emptiness. It's something about those stars always being in the same place, being able to be found, being expected, being majestic and beautiful. And, wow, nicely done.
Yeah, I agree. Side really singing was my favorite line, too. That's a very inventive, beautiful line. So I'm right with you there. Yeah, it makes sense. Exactly. It's always good when it makes sense, too.
Yeah.
But absolutely. Yeah, no, I was totally on point with everything you said. Excellent. And I could listen to your voice all day, Afaziani, and you read it beautifully. And what were you thinking when you read it?
I was thinking I really like escaping endless endpoints of existing, because it makes me think about how even after a star dies, the light is still traveling to us. So sometimes the stars that we see don't even exist anymore. So they've escaped that end of existing. They've gotten past the mortality of things, because they're still being experienced through these dancing lights. I just think that's a beautiful concept, and that's what I thought about when I read that part. I don't know if that's actually what they're referring to, but that's where my mind went. And I also like the sound of entering ether eddies. That's just a cool line. I didn't clue in about the marble at first, and then when you said that, Dan, I was like, duh, of course that's what it is. Once you talked about it, I was like, okay, I really like that part too. And when it says hanging in the emptiness, it makes me think. So in my fairy tale science class thing that I was doing today, we were talking about Chicken Little and how the acorn falls and its gravity. I was trying to explain the concept of gravity, which I was failing to do. And I'm like, okay, so why does this fall if I let go of it? And they're like, because you're not holding it. I'm like, yes, and what's pulling it down? And they're like, you dropped it. They're just like so blaming of me. So like hanging in the emptiness, the idea of not being able to hang in the emptiness normally, but this is kind of hanging in the emptiness. Except is it? Because even the Earth that's in space is still being pulled by the gravity of the sun, and there seems like there's always something pulling something. So anyway, that just kind of like my mind went wandering because the hanging thing, will you let go? But yeah, I really, really loved the part about escaping endless endpoints of existing.
Did you say fairy tale science class? Am I too old to join that class?
It's just a little after school thing I do at the library. I read them a fairy tale and then we talk about whatever scientific principle I can weave into that.
I want to major in fairy tale science. That sounds fantastic to me. Mel C said, I love alliteration. Personally, use it a lot, and that's great. I do like alliteration, too. It's fun to me. It looks like you have another one up.
I do. So this one is by Peter Solway. And, Laurent, would you read that for us, please?
Yes, ma'am. Will do. There you are. Comprehension by Peter Solway. Beyond Comprehension, excuse me. Stars and planets to twinkle and shine. Balloon moon naked in all her prime. Out back in the swag, close to earth. Nests of biting bull ants. Cozy with timid Darlene in underpants. Point out Venus. Pull out stiff penis. Don't know why such a scene. Hooded cobra to hiss. Not so cozy any longer with Darlene, thinking her Wordsworth, man obscene, splattered with expletives, fleeing the criminal scene. Hysterical woman, Electra problems, waking the campground. Manager from hut, weeping Darlene, crying rape to him, and plump life, plump wife on landing. Well, planets were listed, leading up to penetration, right up till Uranus suggested, whispered, a little spit and polish, Greek virgin of olive oil, daughter of the deep Aegean. Darlene going supernova then, black hole with loud hailer, waking up the whole Milky Way, accusations of rape, sodomy, and misogyny. Lactation never ending for Madonna's weeping, bush shower of cream, Darlene to scream, Daddy, go away, filthy demon, asteroids of destruction. But Cook on Watch didn't extract no telescope. Art of love, so to speak, dark matter explorer with punch, outback fountain premature, orbiting moons of Jupiter, liberated and pure. Darlene, now to fume, glue of male dominance. But honest, the naked boast, with all those celestial bodies, circling about dream ceilings of infinite doings, subways of mating queens, just suggesting, just a committed shove, twinkling and shining above, feel the ground, nozzles sprinkling on there behind. Darlene's mission of public protesting began there and then, screaming victim, tent flap fleeing, shark of man. I've been possibly sodomized by him, cigarette smoking, manager writing it down, requesting details, how many times, how full the moon, large his member, sticking with her story, covered with DNA evidence, Darlene to never wash again. But a young Clint no more, strap a six-gun to holster, retired from the roping and raping business, suggesting art of a reflective Vermeer, and maces of American interests to thermal to solemnly swear, eagle in feathered underwear, all carrion feeders, intent on putrid earth. Stars of the southern hemispheres aligned with such a howling bitch, Darlene Dingo with sisters, mattress under a bridge. No fun at all on a full moon outing to recall phallic banting, excuse me, phallic baiting, not a certain success, semen of offspring, looks of early risers next morning, Venus with black eye and G-string, twang and twing, twing and twang. Well, up her, sir, Mr. Campground Manager, just don't offer to poke her after hours, out in God's paddock, point out cosmic facts, the land where bull ants bite. Penning down his license number, camp manager, a real anal retentive stickler, wife and slippers lost interest, back through screen to bedroom TV dream. Crime of the worst cities, men with guns, women applauding, turn the sound down. Program about Galileo, a more pleasant option, extending the distance of lens, seeing more than less stars of a system. Big deal, says her entering man. Darlene, Darlene, writing nonsense again. What a stupid poem, composing this time. End poem.
Epic poem and epic read, Laurent. Thank you. The first thing I had somebody who, a poet on here who declared themselves underage. They were 14. So I'm really glad that we didn't have them on the show, because this definitely holds no punches. So this is why we have an age restriction on the poems. But what came to mind, because this is so so intricate. Speaking of Carl Sagan, if anybody knows who Isaac Asimov is, he was quoted once saying he wished he knew half as much about the universe as Carl Sagan. And I often think on here, I wish I was half as intelligent as some of the poets on here. You know, this is deserving of multiple reads to really get what's going on. But the general idea that I definitely agree on here, the beyond comprehension is, you know, can we actually comprehend the meaning of the universe? Like, I think he's really getting into the meaning of everything in the whole universe. You know, I've had people before I've talked to who aren't really astronomers, and I've just said, you know, you can't fathom how big just the universe really is and how far away things are. Like, oh, yes, I can. And I go, no, you really can't. There's no possible way the human mind can do that. The other thing that the main theme of this, I think, is the, you know, when I see a lot of what he's writing about is the stars and the planets as kind of people and penetrating each other and merging and you know the rape or whatever could be like galaxies colliding, and I have thought about that before, which is interesting. Of, you know, the way that stars and planets kind of merge together and create. You know, how much like creating that we do is like that, you know, how much of the energy that it comes into of the act of creation for humans and the amount of energy in the creation and even just physically, just sperm and egg and so forth, just can remind you on a universal sense of stars and planets and things colliding, that when they do that, it creates new life again. It creates new planets, right? Stars colliding or exploding will create new life, new galaxies again. So that's what I was thinking about this, and I'm sure there's a lot more that I have to read into it again, but really interesting. And to that young poet, not that we don't want them on here. I really appreciate it. The poem was great, but you got to wait a few years before you come on Late Night Poets, unfortunately. Hopefully you're not listening to them to this telling you that, but anyway, I throw that out there. Afasiana, what did you think of this epic poem?
Well, I have to agree with Pee-wee. Says Mr. Solway does what I deem topographic poems, because there's layers upon layers, and he does.
Yes.
I said to Peter a while ago that he's like intelligently vulgar, or I did something about like I was talking about like how he's usually a little bit dirty, but he does it in a like very sophisticated way. And he was like, I've never been so proud of a comment in my life. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he was quite happy with that assessment. I like the part where it's talking about, like, eagle and feathered underwear, all carrion feeders intent on putrid earth. I just love the use of carrion in that section. And I like the way that he breaks the fourth wall there. We can look, what a stupid poem, composting this time. And then the compost, again, kind of goes back to, like, the carrion feeder. It's like, you know, it's the thing that's decaying and goes for it. Really interesting images that he has. I kind of expected him to go for something about, like, Cassiopeia, because that just seems like the constellation he would go to, because she boasts about her beauty, and then she gets stuck up there. I don't know why. For some reason, I was expecting him to incorporate her into this, because he often does with mythology. So, Peter, missed opportunity. But I think he was interesting and complicated and a little bit shocking, all rolled into one, which is, classic Peter.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I want to give Pee-wee a plug, by the way. He told me that he was actually on where is it? The Headliners Ball last night. So if you're a fan of Pee Wee's poems, definitely listen to that. You should listen to the Headliners anyway, but he was on there. So definitely listen to that. And Mel C, she says, needs time to analyze. And I agree. Usually his Peter's poems do. And she enjoyed listening to us, she said. So I thank you. That we always enjoy people listening. We would like audiences. Laurent, speaking of people I enjoy listening to, Laurent, what do you got for us?
As an aside, you mentioned Asimov. I once had the pleasure of having lunch with a gentleman while at a book signing. I noticed his wife was being very neglected, Janet Asimov. So I sat down next to her. We struck up a conversation. You know, he was signing books for a good hour and a half, and we were having a great old time. And it was time for them to go to lunch, and they asked me to go, and I did. I had 6 hardcovers under my arm. He signed them all.
Wow.
Had a great time. However, I also like a great deal. I think he had his comment on intelligently vulgar. That was a great expression. And, you know, it's been said that while swearing can become a habit, you know, there's context for swearing. And a lot of people who swear well have a great deal of verbal fluency, which is important. I mean, it's not a sign of language poverty or low intelligence, but an articulate speaker can really use that for maximum effectiveness, and I think he does. And there is that in here. In remarkably long, you really have to have your wits about you and see that it's almost like the universe come to earth, a maelstrom of twisted communications, desires, ways of acting, responses to human things, responses to unpleasant things. It is a lot here. It's a lot to digest, but it's always really tested us as readers and dared us to critique, which I won't.
Excellent, excellent. And how jealous am I you got to hang out with Asimov. He's one of my heroes, so that must have been amazing. I'll have to hear more about that at a later time. But
From the age of 12 to the age of 60, maybe 70,
yep.
I collected science fiction. I got thousands of science fiction books. I adore it.
Yep.
I used to really adore it. I've stopped reading it now because, I don't know, time. But my favorite type of literature.
Absolutely, mine too. I'm reading some Alan Dean Foster right now. Larry Niven's my favorite writer.
The Ring series, the Ringworld series. God,
awesome.
How about the Integral Trees? Did you ever read that?
I did both of those books in there. I've read pretty much everything he's done. He's my favorite author, and like I said, I'm reading some Alan Dean Foster. But I got to sorry everybody. Laurent and I are geeking out here for a second. I did find Larry Niven's email address when I in like the 90s, and I actually emailed him, and he actually wrote me back. So that was my only thing with the science fiction writer. I didn't get to have lunch with Asimov like you, but I did actually email him, and he actually wrote me back, and it was him. I could even tell by the way he wrote. So I was excited that I had some contact with one of my heroes. But amazing that you got to. He's a amazing mind, Asimov. It's great you got to hang out with him. Awesome. All right, sorry. We're out of Comic-Con here. We're back into reality. Sorry, guys.
We're at a World Science Fiction Convention, not Comic-Con.
That's right. It's World Science Fiction Convention. That's right. We're sorry.
I mean, I want to go to both of
those
things.
Are you still
with
us, or did you leave? Oh, okay.
Are you kidding? Geeking out about author visits? I mean, that's half of why I do what I do. Like,
That's true.
I don't usually work Fridays, but every once in a while we have an author visit on a Friday, and my boss is like, do you think maybe you could come in? I'm like, oh, I guess so. Like, serious? Of course. I'm going to come whether I'm working or not. Of course I'm going to.
Who's your favorite? Did you ever meet anybody that you were awestruck with for an author?
I really like Guy Gabriel Kay. He's a fantasy author.
Congratulations,
Diana Gabaldon, who did
on
Outland.
Discovering a wonderful writer.
For Guy Gabriel Kay?
Oh yeah.
Or who?
I never heard of him, so I'm gonna have to check him out. I don't know him.
Oh, I think you'll like him.
Read his
okay,
wonderful.
Wonderful. And he was so nice, too. He was really, really nice. But there's a few who are less nice. I was not a fan of Robert Sawyer, who's a good writer, but jerk. he was so sexist.
Oh, wow.
He kept calling me a book groupie. Anyway, okay, back to the poetry. there's one by Opti, and Dan, I think it's your turn to read.
Excellent. I would be honored. By Opti, called Heavens Above! Exclamation. I've looked above my nights of misery to see anything I could see, the biggest brother looking down on me, and I concluded, after long deliberation, what will be, will be. The stars, the constellations agree. Heavens above, although beautiful imagery, still leave me wanting, still not free. Tied to this infancy, born and reborn, to grow, to know myself. End poem. Excellent little brevity, Opti. Laurent, channel the mind of Asimov and give me your comment on this one here.
I've looked above my nights of misery to see anything I could see. The biggest brother looking down on me, and I concluded after long deliberation, what will be, will be. And I'm sitting here reading that, and that's absolutely correct. Everything around you, from the stars, the constellations, the heavens above, and we are tied to this. We are born into it. We are reborn. We grow, and we begin to know ourselves. It's a nice contrast, what we experience within a larger framework of birth, if you will. You have the birth of the world, the birth of the galaxies, the birth of yourself. Great brevity.
Absolutely. And Pee-wee says, Asimov, Sagan, Hawking, I believe, held more knowledge than the rest of the species combined. Could be.
I love Hawking. That reminds me of something. You know, I'm going to indulge you. I'm going to ask you to indulge me, and maybe I got a very short piece I would love to share with you guys at some point this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's we'll get that in. My quick Carl Sagan story is I actually part of this thing called the Planetary Society, and they had in Harvard, Massachusetts, not the college, the town, there's a radio telescope. And they were actually, I was at the opening of it when they opened it and they turned it on to look for life. There was only like 50 people there, you know, and Sagan was supposed to be there. So I was all excited, like, I can't believe I'm going to meet Carl Sagan. And he was too sick at the time. This is towards the end of his life, so he couldn't make it. So this other guy, Lewis Friedman, was there, who I got to meet, which was good. And there was a bunch of people from actually Harvard and MIT. But I almost got to meet Sagan. It was just he was just sick and he couldn't come. But that would have I'm still happy that I almost got to meet him. Like, it makes me happy that I was still at that event that I almost got to meet him. Anyway, that's my geeking out on Sagan. But yeah, excellent. So, Faziana, what do you think?
I think it's great. Where is it now? still leave me wanting, still not free, tied to this infancy, born and reborn. I like tied to this infancy. It's, you know, there's that we are so tiny and young considering, like, the age and size of the universe that we're always going to be infants in the eyes of the grand scheme of things. Yeah, it's kind of an overwhelming thing to think about how tiny we are and not free to explore it all the way we want to. Because there's no way we could possibly see everything, even if we had the technology. We wouldn't have time to explore it all. It just makes me think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sometimes when I am, you know, overwhelmed, I just go outside and look up, and sometimes it goes away because it just puts perspective on things. So, excellent, excellent. We got about 20 minutes left. What do you want to do?
Let me just refresh here. Oh, I lost it. That's why. I closed the board.
We do have one by Mel. I don't know if we want to do that one.
Actually, yeah, that is what I copied. We are on the same wavelength.
Cool.
If I could paste. There we go. Okay, the spaces in between. By Mel C. Big Dipper, Little Dipper, North Star, Orion. My dad taught me how to find them, Milky Way, Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars. I became mesmerized by all the stars. It was the depths in all the darkness. The universe brought some calmness. It was the infinite spaces in between, the places that could not be seen. Nights spent exploring existence, hours spent sitting in all the silence. Stars free-falling and galaxies glowing, memories of whispering and giggling, bugs buzzing, crickets chirping, frogs croaking, chiming in to remind me I'm just an earthling. Towers blinking, planes moving, UFOs spotting, gallivanting eyes still gazing and star-searching. The creation of our stars, sun, moon, earth, all part of a home we call the universe. It is a God for our humanity that I see. Looking at the sky makes me feel free.
Thank you, Faziana. And I've always said that, you know, I write a lot of scientific type stuff and philosophy, and I actually think that science and nature is poetic and beautiful, and that's the way to really see it. I've also always said if you want to study God, it's not necessarily, and this might sound sacrilegious, but it's not as much in a Bible and a church as it is in nature. You know, that's God, right? God is the grass and the air and the sky. That's, you know, if you believe in God, that's what God created, whatever you think it is. That's, so you want to study it. To me, I think that, you know, say what you want about religion. I do like the philosophy and religion, and I'm always, you know, interested in it, but I think the study of science is the study of God as well, too. And I just think it's a beautiful, you know, poetic thing. And that's, you know, that's the way to think about it. And people like Sagan and why am I spacing this guy? Who is Sagan's? He's an African-American guy. He's famous. He's Sagan's protege. Why am I spacing his name?
Coming to mind is Neil deGrasse Tyson, but I don't think that's actually who you're talking about.
That's him.
Yep.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yep. Yeah, he was a protege.
I love him.
He, as a little kid, he actually hung out with Sagan. Sagan took him under his wing. People like him that when he talks, he's so passionate. It's so poetic about science, and I think that's the way. I don't know why everybody isn't like that. That's what I get out of this. It's just this real poetic. It's just beauty that Mel saw as a kid, and just how you look at the passion and beauty of the universe. So that's what I think, and that's great. And Laurent, all about you.
Yeah, the ability to see within the creation of stars, sun, moon, and earth, the universe, and all that is engendered by it, becomes almost, well, it is spiritual. It is a God for our humanity that I see. Looking at the sky makes me feel free, because everything that he mentions, the bugs buzzing, the crickets chirping, the frogs croaking, the nights spent exploring existence, stars free-flowing, galaxies glowing, it's all part of that infinite horizon that we always strive for, and that we then see immediately around us. And it is completely elevating to really study the stars on a dark, dark night. And when you look at the universe for any length of time, sprawled all around you, with no city lights to interfere, it does bring a sense of calmness, because the vista is so vast, that we have to imagine the infinity of spaces in between those points of light. This is a great piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks, Laurent. Faziana, you read it lovely. What do you think?
I thought it was beautiful. It had, you know, the innocence of childhood, but the intelligence of thinking about it. It's a nice combination like that. The part that I really thought was heartwarming was when the bugs were making the noises, chiming in to remind me I am just an earthling. Because you can get lost in your thoughts staring at the stars and, like, imagine that you're in space. But you hear these sounds from your own world, and they bring you back into your reality. I thought that detail really made it feel real, like this was a true experience, because that does happen. I like the connection to her father and to that feeling of freedom looking up at the sky and just really fully experiencing that moment, that calmness. And I like that the title is The Spaces in Between, because that's another great line in here. It was the infinite spaces in between, the places that could not be seen. I think that's really powerful. And actually, I can't remember what it's called because I have terrible memory, but there's a newish satellite out there that's been taking pictures that are, like, blowing the Hubble pictures, like, out of the water. And those places that in the Hubble images looked like black spaces between things, now we can see so much stuff that's in that space in between. And it kind of makes you wonder what is in the spaces in between in that image, because there's probably more that we still can't see. And it's just amazing how the shots taken at the same places can now show us so much more. So when I think about the spaces in between, I think about how it used to be blank, and now we see stuff there, and there's so many possibilities.
The James Webb Telescope, I believe, is the new one, yep. Yeah, and I too like the bugs buzzing part. And then after that, though, she goes into towers blinking, planes moving, USO spotting. But my galvanizing eyes are still gazing. So even all this stuff and all these lights that are down here, she's still fixated, right? That's not distracting her from the amazement that she's looking at. So I thought that was I too thought that was a beautiful stanza. So what are we doing now? Our fate is in your hands.
Now we are letting our guest read his poem, and thank you for bringing that.
You're very welcome. This is written in response to a quote in my mind, I am free, quotes from Stephen Hawking, you know, confined to that chair, yet in his mind he is free. And that really moved me thinking about him, because he's been so influential, so important to our understanding of the universe. And the understanding of mankind in general. So this is called Our Story. Errant stars, where are your voices? Stream me a song of answers, for I would know what I do not. Drown me in a whirlpool of lucent light. Bathe me in your histories of alabaster gases and colored flames. Untie me from this wheel of earth. Let me paw the universe like a bull, scraping at the dirt before battle. Move me into dimensions of creation and wonder, a traveler beating at the drums of time. I will fly this chair, slipping down the warp and woof of things, straight into beginnings. And there I will tell our story. End poem.
Excellent, excellent. And thanks for this, Laurent. This is absolutely fits perfectly with the themes that we have tonight, of, you know, the stars and the planets, but how does that make you feel, right? That's what, it wasn't just scientific, but how does it relate to you? And I think that, that fits perfectly. I think about that a lot, about stars. You know, there's so much that goes on. You know, we're supposedly, quote unquote, the most, you know, advanced creatures, which in a lot of ways we definitely are. I think women are more advanced than men, but there you go, it's a different side of the story. But the, I think women are the most advanced creatures in the universe that we know of right now. And but we think of all these things, but the sun has been there before all of it, right? And all the stars are really, you know, you can find other things. We find quasars, and we find all these things way back in time that are really ancient. But stars are just so ancient, and they're these things that are really the beginnings of creation, and we don't necessarily realize that. We don't, you know, we take the sun for granted all the time. We don't realize that it's an actual star that's right close to us, and again, how ancient it is, and how just, you know, creative of everything that we know. So I do think about that, just how ancient these stars are, and basic, right? Just hydrogen and helium crashing around, some of the most basic elements, the beginnings of the universe. Beautiful. I really enjoyed this. I think this really, again, fits the contest and sums up a lot about what Hawking was talking about. So nice job, Laurent. Great job.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Faziana.
I really like how this gets into, like, the limitations that he faces on Earth and how his exploration of space in his mind and all the possibilities of knowing about space kind of, like, gives him the chance to not be tied down. So untie me from the wheel of this Earth. I mean, he was in a wheelchair, so it, the wheel there makes me think about, like, how he was kind of bound in a way where he couldn't necessarily feel physically free, but, you know, then it talks about, I will fly this chair, slipping down the warp and the woof of things straight into the beginning. So it's like this, his knowledge and his wonder at all of the things of space let him escape and gave him kind of that hope of not being trapped within his body that was struggling. I really liked the wording of, let me paw the universe like a bull scraping at the dirt before battle, because that's such a strong image, the bull when he's doing that little kick, that excitement before the charge, and to have that as a metaphor for the way that his mind was so excited to move forward and you know, fight this battle of knowledge, just blew me away. I think this is wonderful. It's a celebration of Stephen Hawking in many ways.
Thank you.
Glad absolutely. Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, and Mel, I thought Mel left, but Mel did say that she got to hear her poem read and commented on. So great, I'm glad you're still here, Mel. And yes, what an amazing human. Absolutely. You know, we're all fragile. You know, he's one of those guys that reminds you how fragile we are, right? You know, that could happen to any of us any time. You know, you never know what's going to happen. So interesting. Cool. We have 7 minutes left. I should be good timing as a drummer, but I'm not. So what do you want to do? You think we have time for one more?
I think let's do one more, and there will definitely be carryovers, and that's okay.
Okay.
All right. So there's one by Robert J. Tice, and I'm trying to think. I think, Dan, it's your turn.
Sure. I'd be happy to read that one by Robert Tice. Mirror of Eternity. Sometimes while staring at the stars, I'll recall I am part of that, the lavish cosmic tapestry of galaxies and nebula. The black holes, all the gaping void, the icy comets trailing dust, each planet, moon, and asteroid, our blazing sun, this very Earth, involved, atomic, just like you, enfolded in the whirling whole of what has passed and what will be, though timeless, more than laws or mass, significant with consciousness to comprehend the universe, is us alive, quite self-aware, inquisitive to know itself, to search, discover, to be explored with memories and revelations, if we can bring ourselves to see the mirror of eternity. End poem. Awesome way to end. I think this really sums up the whole contest that we have. And it's, you know, it is us alive, quite self-aware. And that's actually the title of my book, and what I call humanity is conscious energy. You know, everything is energy, right? Every single thing. Lift up dirt. The dirt is moving. There's energy in it. You know, when you go down to atomic level, and that's what I think we are again, is just conscious energy. We're matter that has come together into this form, and we've achieved consciousness. You know, when you look up and you see all these this craziness in outer space, it's we are part of that. We're made of the same stuff, right? You know, some of the quotes that I had on there were all talking about how we're stardust. We're made of star stuff. Neil deGrasse Tyson says it all the time. We have that flowing in our veins. And to know that we're part of it, right? We're not separated from it. We're part of all of that. We're part of the universe. Is beautifully written by Robert here. So excellent job and excellent way to end the night. Laurent, your thoughts.
For how many centuries did we ignore purposefully the existence of the larger whole that is the universe? You know, for many it was the Earth is the center of the world, or the center of any universe that exists. Everything revolves around us. And yet, as you say, we are simply part of the whole, a microcosm. Almost like gazing into a pool of bacteria or small living things that are completely unconscious of the world around them. Yet we understand now that greater whole, the thing that we are part of, the lavish cosmic tapestry, as Robert says. And it is a mirror of eternity. All that has happened, here we are. Well done.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Laurent. And Faziana, it's all up to you now if you want to comment and kind of take us home. And
all right. I loved the closing of its mirror of eternity. I think the whole piece just really makes us think. I liked enfolding in the whirling whole of what has passed and what will be. It's all like... it's all connected, and it's a cycle. And you are just a tiny little piece of it, of time, and a tiny little bit of the space. I like thinking of it as a tapestry, and you know, we're one little stitch in that tapestry. But you're a part of it. You're connected to it. You're in there, even if we're a tiny little fleck. And the way that he words this is just absolutely beautiful. It makes you think, but it also has like a zen to it. I feel calm having read this. You know, I have very mixed feelings about looking at space. I either feel super calm or I start to feel panicked. so it can go either way, and this is making me have the nice calm feeling of it. Very
good.
Nice. Thank you, Robert.
I just want to say Pee-wee put a poem up that we don't have time to read, but he said extra credit. And he put another poem on, I think, the same type of subject. So anybody that's listening, if you want extra credit on this thing we have here tonight, read that. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Faziana.
Oh, that's okay. I'm going to add it to the board so I remember to carry it over with the rest of it.
Oh, cool.
Put it on there. Yeah, we're going to have lots of carryovers, which is great. We had originally thought we didn't have enough, so we doubled up the contest, and it ended up growing and growing, and we got so many wonderful writes. So I'm happy that people continued to submit. I'm really happy that Dan came up with this contest. So thank you, Dan, for getting us going with the space theme tonight. It's definitely inspiring for a lot of people. Thank you so much, Laurent, for calling, and to Pee-wee and Mel for hanging out on the chat board with us, and thank you to everyone who wrote. Your poetry is why we are here. We want to celebrate your poetry. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for giving us this time slot, and stay tuned, because I believe Pam and Rex will be on in half an hour. So you're going to have more wonderful poetry coming your way. And then Fill My Eyes has a show tomorrow, Open Poetry. And after that, there is Part Sinner, Part Saint, which is usually me, but I'm going on a road trip, so it's going to be Babbler and Pam who are taking on. So thank you to them for taking that on. All right. Good night, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Adriana. Good night.